very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07. This is Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, very happy to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. Laura Stein will be here in just a few moments. In the meantime, one of the usual suspects on our crew here, it's Doug Hackbarth. Doug, a very good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good afternoon, Sean. Glad to be here.
Doug, of course, we're getting into, we are in the fall season, and it's awfully warm outside for this time.
Say it might even hit, if not 79, certainly close to 80 degrees today, and that is incredibly warm for this time of the year. But, you know, the fall leaves, it's always fun. I got the opportunity to go up north earlier on as they were changing pretty much before ours really got started. And then later I got to go down to Brown County. Everyone knows Brown County is the leaf capital of the world. And, at least in Indiana. And I got to see the leaves there, and they're beautiful. But you know what I'm starting to notice? This, and it just happened overnight. The leaves are coming off of things very fast.
Oh, we've had some awfully windy weather the last few days.
Well,
winds gusting today, around 30 miles an hour or something
like that? Oh, yeah. And it actually, it's kind of like it does it and then it stops for a while, because I was out watering the last of the garden mums, and it was breezy. And then by the time I was through, and I wasn't out there that long because I don't have very many, the wind wasn't blowing at all. So it's not only gusty, but it's sporadic besides. But I've noticed, here's the real kick of what I noticed was, we were looking at burning bushes yesterday and commenting about how absolutely gorgeous they are. They're just full and thick. And this morning, I'll bet you, 70-80% of the leaves are gone, and they were there yesterday. So I'm telling you, overnight or
one day we're looking at beautiful colors, the next day, boy, it's sure gone. Looks more like winter out there.
Well, yeah. So do you want me to give the numbers today?
Sean's
having a little problem. I guess he's either catching a cold or something. His voice
recovering from fun drive here, but go for it. Give the numbers.
Yeah. Then, if you'd like to call in, the local phone number here is 452-1185. Toll free numbers 800. Notice I didn't say 1-800, because I keep telling you, you don't have to put one on. Most people do not have to do one anymore. 800-471-9264, and the website is NIPR. Oh, that's the website.
You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. And, of course, we have our Twitter feed up and running, and we've got our Facebook page as well. We actually posted some wonderful photos then to Laura Stein. We're going to chat about bulbs just a little bit later in the program. In the meantime, though, Doug, we do have a caller on the line. So let's go to Rita Marie. Good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon.
Rita.
Just waiting to get in. talking about fall, and you're watering the last of the garden mums.
Right.
We have a hardy mum that was a birthday gift last month, and we haven't figured out where we want to plant it in the yard yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, can it winter over in the pot? And if so, does it need to be brought indoors?
Okay, well, you know, the pot size makes the difference here. If you have it in a small pot, it will not winter over near as well as if it's in a larger container.
It is a large pot.
Yep, and in both cases, they're going to probably need a little extra protection for the winter time. And so generally, you can leave it outside in the pot practically all the way through November, whenever it's going to snow or whatever, and it's going to get really cold and stay that way, you might want to move it inside to either an unheated storage building or a garage that's unheated. And if the garage is heated, just make sure it's located close to the door, because that's going to be a cold spot no matter what. So you're going to want to keep it in a cold, and during the winter months, the light is not important. In fact, you're not trying to grow the plant. You're just trying to keep it through the winter months. All of the top foliage, besides the blooms dying, the foliage and the stems will all completely die by next year. Mm-hmm. And all you're really doing is trying to keep the root ball intact until next year. So keep it in a place that's protected if it's going to be in the pot, but you don't want to keep it in a warm place. It needs to go dormant and stop growing through the winter months. So a cold place is necessary.
Should it get any water?
Yes, and you do want to make sure that once you put it away, that you just water it before you put it away. I would say water it one day and put it away the next. Here's one more tip for those people listening who maybe don't have a storage shed or an unheated garage. Put it under some bushes, the evergreen-type bushes. If you've got no place else to go, lay the pot over on its side. Water it one day, then lay it over on its side and shove it underneath the bush as tight as you can. You could even pile leaves up over it, and that will help protect it through the winter months. That would work pretty well, too.
All right.
But if you can't plant it in the ground, you probably don't have bushes. Let's deduce that.
We can, but we just haven't figured out where.
Just don't know where. Well, you know, and that brings up a great point. Yeah. Do you have another caller, Sean?
And
that brings up a great point because this is the funny thing. When I was growing hardy mums at my own home, I used to plant them in a place that I wanted them to look good in the fall, just like now. And then I would leave them there all winter. But in the spring, I would pop them out of the ground and move them to my vegetable garden. Why the vegetable garden? Because they're not going to look good and be budded until late summer anyway. So I would move them to the vegetable garden, and I would grow them just like a crop. And then after they were budded and ready to bloom in late summer, early fall, then I would move them back up to a spot that was very showy. It might be window boxes, it might be in a pot, or it might be somewhere in the ground up where people driving by see them. So there's no problem with moving these things back and forth throughout the season. So in other words, you could take it out and put it in your vegetable garden after it's finished blooming and leave it there all summer.
Yeah. Then one other winter over question.
Okay.
Hibiscus. I know you've talked about it before.
Are these annual hibiscus?
I just know they're hibiscus bushes that are in large pots.
Yep. Okay, well, I'll make it brief, and then maybe later in the show we can get into more detail, but that'll have to go inside. Yeah, normally I would tell you to bring stuff like that in earlier so you wouldn't lose your leaves, but I don't care if the leaves fall off. It's probably a good thing. But you're going to want to cut it back, bring it in, put it in a sunny window, and keep it closer to the glass so that it stays cool but not freezing, and just store it there, and don't water it near as often once it's inside through the winter months. Maybe once every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks, give it a good drink of water, and then forget about it for the whole month. So that's it. And then, but be sure and cut it back. All right. Later in the show, I'll try to get into more detail, but Sean's ready to move to the next person.
Yeah. Rita Marie, unfortunately, we have another caller, but we'll definitely revisit here.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call, and have a very, very good day. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for our super team. And I can say team now because Laura Stein is in studio with us. Laura,
I made it.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
A little bit later, Laura sent us some just lovely photos of bulbs, and we'll get into that discussion perhaps after the next break here. We do have another caller on the line, though, in the meantime. So let's open the phones and go to Mark. Mark, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi. I heard you talking earlier about burning bushes, and I had a question about, we got about 5 or 6 of them in our yard, and they look really healthy, and they're really going well during the summer. And I heard you talking about, you saw them turning and dropping the leaves. Ours take forever to turn, and they are just starting to show a little bit of red on them.
Sure.
I have no idea why.
Well, there are late varieties. There's several varieties of burning bushes. They're not all the same, and there are late blooming, if you want to call that blooming, but late turning varieties, and so you probably have got the late type, and there's some that don't even turn hardly red at all, which is kind of boring
to
me.
Tend to turn a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen some that don't turn at all.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that's not good. I guess for other listeners, just make sure when you buy a burning bush, you make sure it's the type that does change color.
And I have to chime in a little bit here. For anyone who's thinking of purchasing new burning bushes, there are, I'm working with Ricky Camry and some other folks up at the Extension office, and we're working on a sustainability committee. And the burning bush really are ones that are turning up on the invasive species list. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for that amazing fall color, look a little more toward chokeberry and sweet spire. Itea is the botanical on that one. So there's other shrubs that can really give you some amazing fall color. But I know that the red of the burning bush is really quite pretty.
Oh, yeah. Very popular at this time.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Mark, thanks very much for your call. Have a good day. We do want more of our listeners to join us this hour. The number, of course, 260-452-1185. Or you can always call us toll-free, 1-800-471-9264. We do have some wonderful photos up on our Facebook page, and you can comment there as well. We're going to take a quick break, though. We'll keep the conversation going when we get back. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Hi, I'm Julia Meekin, who's on this week's Ever Adventuresome Meet the Music. Anna Dodero and Giselle Kladensky, Chicago soul man Tommy LaVille, and new folk work from Eben Trier. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM or listen online at NIPR.FM, a two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music.
And now, a few words in praise of an unlikely cut of meat, the heart of a cow.
It's a rough, tough, angry muscle surrounded by clean fats, which means it tastes deeply beefy.
And foodies say delicious. Beef heart, a dish that may surprise you. Later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, some of the latest developments at Gitmo, a subject that was barely mentioned in the presidential debates. Award-winning Canadian journalist Michelle Shepard has been to Gitmo over 2 dozen times. She even got enough stamps on her Gitmo Starbucks card for a free latte. She's the national security correspondent for the Toronto Star. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold & Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Take the guesswork out of your retirement plan. More information at Reinbold & Anderson on NIPR's homepage at www.nipr.fm.
Minutes past 12 o'clock, and this is Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth and Laura Stein. And of course, we want to be joined by you today. If you have a question or comment about your outer spaces, do give us a call and share your thoughts. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. And don't forget, it's the last Thursday of the month, and that usually means that Laura has sent us some wonderful photos to take a look at and be jealous of. And Laura, when you sent those photos to me, I just basically saw a big exclamation point bulbs. We're talking right. talking bulbs. Go ahead, take it away. And for those around a computer, bring up our Facebook page and follow along.
Well, definitely this is. And first, I should apologize for my tardiness. However, my crew and I were out planting bulbs, so it's sort of timely as well.
And perfect weather for it, too.
Oh, it is. Perfect. It is. And now is the window, right? Now's the window to do it. Right. So if you're looking at anything that you want to plant, and it really is just the best thing in the spring when you've gone through weeks and weeks of snow and slosh and we've been shoveling. And when you see that first bud, just a little, poke out of the soil, it really is truly exciting. So if you are following us online, and you can take a look at some of the photos on the Midday Matters Facebook page, I'm a big fan of allium, and that is it is in the onion family, and there's a really great variety called Globemaster. It has a quite large flower head on it, and what these look like are they look like little lollipops in the landscape. They come up on, they have their leaf is at the base of the plant, their grouping of leaves, and then they come up on this very thin, tall stalk. The Globemaster is one of the largest varieties, and it gets probably 3 feet tall, and then you get a nice big, 6-inch, 8-inch round lollipop looking shape of flowers on the top. And what I love about these is when they bloom, they're really fun. And then as they stop blooming, they get the seed head dries on it, and it's really quite pretty. So I tucked in a photo. I included a photo today of the seed head and the light coming through the back of it. And it's just really quite pretty even after. So you can really get weeks and weeks of enjoyment out of this. And I will say it doubles as a very lovely fairy wand once it goes
to bloom, too. It's a
beautiful
photo, and that is at our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/middaymatters, where you can also ask a question or share a comment or maybe tell Laura how much you like her photos. I'm jealous. We'll get back to more bulb talk in just a moment here, but it looks like we have a few more callers. So let's open up the phones and go to Terry on line one. Terry, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Terry.
Good afternoon. I was calling about one. Any advice on general tree care going into the winter months here? Anything we should be doing before we get a deep freeze? And two, on my peach trees, I have, I call them sap sores. All kind of little sap spots on the trunk of my peach tree. And my friends say I have some kind of bore, but I don't know if you could give any advice about that, what's causing it, or is there anything I could do about it?
Yeah, I remember. Do you have some comment? Please.
Well, I'm in the general tree care category. Yeah. Terry, I think especially this fall, and especially for evergreens, it would be a very good idea to give your trees in late November or early December, depending on what the weather is, before the ground freezes, a very good soaking to try to get some moisture around the root layer, the root ball at the base of the tree, because we just spent so much time in a drought this year that having that over the winter is going to be very good for the trees. And Doug, I'll pass off to you on the peach question if you've
got something. Well, and I think good pruning is important, too. I don't know that I have a great answer for the peach problem. My grandfather had peach trees. Of all the fruit trees, it always seems like peach trees are the ones that are the toughest because they don't grow straight. They tend to grow sideways, and then they get heavy, and the branches break. And there's always all kinds of, I remember every time I see a sizable peach tree, it's got 2x4s propping the branches up from the ground to keep them from breaking. And, of course, if that were me, I would cut that branch way back, not clear back to the trunk, but way back so that all that weight isn't out there, and try to produce the other branches that are not hanging straight out. But as far as the sapping goes, I don't know what to tell you about that. You know, it's a great question. I might do a little research on why the peach tree sap. I
might place a call up to up to the extension office, because many of the master gardeners, you know, they have areas of specialty. Some of them really study lawns, and some of them really study trees. And I bet you might find someone who knows a good deal about fruit trees. But that's where I would recommend that you call.
Yeah, because that is that, and you're right. It could be because of a borer. That is a very good possibility. So I'd like to do a little research on that just to see if it probably is a borer or if it's just something that happens to peach trees.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you very much, Terry. Have a very good day. We want to invite more of our listeners to join us this hour, 260-452-1185. Or you can always email middaymatters@nivr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or we have Twitter up as well. That's @middaymatters. One more caller on the line at the moment. Let's go to Steve. Steve, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I had a follow-up question, if you will, to something that was said just a few minutes ago, and maybe I'm working with a flawed definition of invasive species, but in what way did burning bush get classed as invasive?
Now this...
I think of English ivy or kudzu or mustard garlic or something like that.
And this is a good source of
a great question.
Of almost argument with Laura and I, because to me, you know, it's like the old saying, is it a weed or is it a flower? If it's where you want it, it's a flower. If it's where you don't want it, it's a weed. As far as invasiveness goes, if I want burning bushes somewhere, how can it be invasive? It's where I want it. But so, it can be invasive to a degree.
So here's the issue. And if there's some great material, if you want to look into it further, there's a group, IPSAWG, IPSAWG, and it's a, I'm sorry, I don't know it spelled out, but it is a group of professionals in the state of Indiana who got together probably 5 to 7 years ago, and they interviewed those people in the state who are working in the DNR, who are working in commercial trade, and they put together a list of what they're seeing. So the issue specifically with burning bush is that, you know, is that it gets little berries, and so the birds come and they eat the berries, and then they fly to the woods, and they fly in the woods, and then you know how they get rid of those berries, because this is a family show.
Delicately put.
Yes. So they drop those in the woods, and then what happens is that there are tons and tons of little seedlings that come up, and they are, so the burning bush is getting out in the wooded areas in our natural spaces, and they're out competing our native shrubs. So it's not invasive in the way of, you know, where you plant that shrub, that usually just stays one shrub. You know, it doesn't invade by runners or things like that. It really usually just stays one shrub, but the birds are eating the seeds, dropping them in the woods, and then it's becoming invasive in that way. And so that's what's happening.
And
that's logical, because my two have shown no sign of taking over the rest of the shrub bed.
Sure.
That's where I got confused.
So. Sure. That's a great question.
And if you want to look up a few more, some additional resources, I guess, about IPSAWG, if you head to the DNR's website, they have their invasive plant species assessment work group documents available for
good
you.
Good detective work, Sean.
I do what I can. Steve, we appreciate the question. Very good
very
question.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Have a very good day. 260-452-1185 or email middaymatters@nipr.fm, facebook.com, of course, and we're on Twitter as well. Lots of ways to get a hold of us. We have time for one more call before we head off to a break here and chat a little bit more about bulbs. We've got Ron on the line. Ron, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. I have a question concerning some lilac bushes that I have that are about 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that there looks like a green or bluish green type of fungus on the major branches.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a fungus? Is there anything that I can do to treat this? Do I need to worry about it? Should I cut them back?
Ron, are you familiar with lichens?
Yes.
Okay. Is it that or is it something different?
It may be a lichen. I had gone on the internet and tried to identify it, and I also thought, well, if I can't figure it out this way, I'll take it out to the extension office, take a swab of it, and take it out and see if they might help. I also noticed it on a dogwood tree that I have out in front. My senility is catching up with me.
I understand the syndrome. Well, lichens are, for those listeners who don't know, it is it's actually a little tiny type of plant, and they grow on many types of woody shrubs and woody trees, and they just grow symbiotically. They don't hurt anything. They're not dangerous. You don't need to treat them in any way. They just grow in tandem with the plant. So that's a non-issue. If it's something like, you know, if it's a scale, that's something different that you would need to treat.
Right.
That's an insect that you would want to take care of. But from your description, I don't know if it, I can't really
so is that,
tell if that is what it is. It doesn't sound like anything that's particularly a problem with lilacs, would you say, Doug? Something
no,
that you've
I
heard
don't
of?
So. Is that lichen similar to a moss?
It is similar, yes.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. And it's probably on the north side of the trunk, which moss
that's
grows
a good
on
question.
The north side.
Is it, right. Is it more on the
so,
north side?
So, yeah, that's what I thought right off, was some type of a mossy growth.
I think you're on the right track about maybe taking it or a photo of it up to the extension office and seeing what they have to say, or you know, you could take a picture and send it to us on the Midday Matters Facebook page if you wanted to.
Or if you have time, you can always email us as well, and
sure.
we can take a look.
Great. Very good. Thanks so much.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks very much,
bye-bye.
Ron. Have a very good day. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll continue our conversation. But we do want to hear from you, so give us a call, 260-452-1185. Or you can call toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. And don't forget, Laura Stein sent along some wonderful photos you can take a look at on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/middaymatters. We have some email questions we'll get to a little bit later on here. Stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, some of the latest developments at Gitmo, a subject that was barely mentioned in the presidential debates, award-winning Canadian journalist Michelle Shepard has been to Gitmo over 24 times. She even got enough stamps on her Gitmo Starbucks card for a free latte. She's the national security correspondent for the Toronto Star. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOY News. Health officials say Indiana has a third death from fungal meningitis linked to injections of a recalled back pain medication, and the total number of cases in the state has risen to 41. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention updated the Indiana cases and deaths on its website Wednesday. The CDC and the Indiana State Department of Health hasn't released any information on where the cases are located in the state. 6 Indiana clinics received the tainted steroids. Relatives of 89-year-old Pauline Burima of Cassopolis, Michigan, have said they believe she contracted the disease after receiving an injection at the OSMC Outpatient Surgery Center in Elkhart. Burima died October 10th. The tainted steroids have been traced to the New England Compounding Center of Framingham, Massachusetts. Embattled GOP Senate candidate Richard Murdoch says he apologizes if anyone misunderstood his comments during Tuesday's debate, in which he said pregnancy resulting from rape was something God intended to happen. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, he said Wednesday he won't apologize for his beliefs.
With occasional tears welling up in his eyes, Richard Murdoch stood before a bank of cameras at state Republican Party headquarters Wednesday and described his experience since the debate as humbling. He says his apology is only if anyone misinterpreted what he said in the debate.
For speaking from my heart, from speaking from the deepest level of my faith, I cannot apologize. I would be less than faithful to my faith if I said anything other than, life is precious. I believe it is a gift from God.
A number of leading Republicans, including presidential candidate Mitt Romney, have distanced themselves from Murdoch's remarks, but Murdoch says he knows there will be people in his own party who disagree with him.
This is a policy issue in the sense of where you draw the line of exceptions, and I understand his position, and I'm sure he understands mine.
A Murdoch campaign appearance featuring New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte was canceled Wednesday, and Murdoch says he's had no personal contact with the Romney campaign and will continue to air television ads featuring the former Massachusetts governor offering an endorsement of Murdoch's run for the Senate. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Senate candidate Joe Donnelly responded Wednesday to Richard Murdoch's comment that pregnancies resulting from rape are something God intended. The Democratic Senate hopeful says the comment is hurtful to women, survivors of rape, and their families. Donnelly spoke briefly Wednesday, saying the controversy surrounding Murdoch is not about abortion or politics, but Murdoch's extreme and hurtful words.
It is legitimate for Hoosiers to expect candidates running for the United States Senate to not take such positions.
And the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles says its license branches will extend their hours around Election Day to issue photo ID cards and driver's licenses that might be needed for identification at polling places. It says most branches will be open Monday, November 5th from 8:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Tuesday, November 6th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. License branches will only process new, amended, or replacement ID cards and renewed, amended, or replacement driver's licenses and learner's permits. Other than processing disability placards, the branches will not perform any other BMV services. License branches provide free state-issued ID cards for voting purposes to unlicensed Hoosiers as long as they can provide proper documentation and are old enough to vote. And now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
It's about 20 minutes before 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Sean Beter. Very happy to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. With me, Doug Hackbarth and Laura Stein, our super team for this afternoon. And we do want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment, you can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm. You can post on our Facebook wall. That's facebook.com/middaymatters. We have Twitter up as well. Or if you'd like to do it the old-fashioned way and give us a phone call, we'd love to hear from you. 260-452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. We have a question here from David. David says, so we're getting ready for winter in the garden. We've pulled all the tomato and cucumber plants and just laid them in the garden to decompose over the winter, but we're leaving the strawberries in. Should we cut them back or just let them frost over and go into hibernation for the winter? I know they'll come back and spread next year, which we're looking forward to. Thanks for the show, and thank you for your question, David. In terms of garden cleanup and strawberries.
Well, generally with strawberry plants, you don't really have to do anything unless the foliage is just tremendously, a lot of it or something. You might want to rake it after it turns brown and just to move some of it over, rake it from there to where the rest of your compost is laying. And the big key to that compost, though, is when you leave it lay around in your garden, the more you can chop it up, the faster it will decompose and do a better job for your garden.
Right, add nutrients back into the soil.
Yeah, I used to have, I'd grow corn and I'd go out there with my hedge trimmers and just chop, 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 chop right down the stalk till I got to the bottom. Usually I'd pull the stump part out with the root system and throw that in a different composting area where it has more time to decompose. But all of those stems should be chopped up and then left in the garden would be fine. But I like to rototill it in too. And if you add some granulated fertilizer, it helps break it up more, a little faster. And of course, water is a key, but you can just wait on rain for that.
Laura Stein, any additional tips for David?
No, that sounds like it got covered.
That's complete. Yeah. All right. David, thank you so much for your question. We appreciate it. And of course, if more folks want to email their questions in, that's middaymatters@nipr.fm. We have another question here via email from Anita. Anita says, I have a trash bin that I filled with compost last year. contains vegetable scraps and rabbit droppings. How long does this need to sit before I can use it in my garden? I'm afraid to open it. And she's got a big, big smiley face. Got a big smiley face there. Thank you so much, Anita.
Man, whether she opens it or not, she ought to at least roll it around. And not
you're
just
talking about
it,
mixing it up.
Roll it around, even in the bag. But compost does need to be turned on a regular basis, or it'll just get stagnant, and especially wrapped in a garbage bag, which is plastic. A lot of compost piles are out in the open, and so the weather plays a big factor in it, and the weather can't get to this. Only humidity and stale air.
Well, she mentioned the trash bin, so I wonder if maybe she has the lid off and it's getting rain, I mean, that could be. My only concern with this is the rabbit droppings. If that's from a pet rabbit, I know typically from pets you don't want the feces if it's a cat or dog or whatever in with the compost, just because the bacteria are different.
Different than like cow manure and horse manure is good.
Right.
But, yeah.
So, so that was the,
it's an interesting
would be
thought.
My
is it
my
good thought. Might it be good advice for Anita to check in with a pro, somebody who can chat about that
about
a little bit further.
Manure.
Whether or not that'll harm the compost.
Yeah.
I think I think that's probably a good idea. Again, you know,
I'll put it on my list too.
There you go. There you go. But, you know, just taking a look and seeing how broken down it is. And it would matter if it's getting rain on it. If there, you know, if there's a lid on that bin and it hasn't been getting a lot of water, that's going to make a difference. If it's been in the sun, that's going to make a difference because it does have to heat up.
Well, and it'll heat
amount.
Up and dry up on top and stay wet on the bottom. Mm-hmm. That's the next factor is that there are holes in the bottom of that bucket because you don't want it to fill up a third of the way with water either.
Right. So well, I think she has to brace herself and look at it.
it's time to put on a brave face, it sounds like.
Right.
260-452-1185 is our local number if you want to get in touch. Or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. I want to go back to our bulb chat here in just a moment, Laura Stein. But this does bring up a good point. You know, I think... when you're talking about compost, you know, that often it seems like you could throw almost anything natural in there. But this raises a good point. There are some things you shouldn't add to the pile.
And there's some things that you should add that I don't like to. And that's a lot of food products because they do draw raccoons and groundhogs if it's out in your yard in the garden somewhere. Although eggshells, I would still do.
Eggshells are great. Coffee grounds
are
great.
I would be limited on what I put out there.
Yeah, most of the vegetables and you know, carrots and salads and you know things like that that you're finished using or that at my house just rot in the refrigerator for some. You know, I don't know how we can't ever keep on track of that, but that's beside the point. But vegetable things, you know, vegetables are good. You know, of course, no meat goes in there,
right?
And so that helps too. But yeah, eggshells, coffee grinds and vegetables, and then you know if you can mix that with the leaves and the grass clippings, that's great. So turning it and you know sometimes what I do when I have a lot of food that's going out in there is you know take a rake or a pitchfork or a shovel and kind of turn it put those underneath so I don't get lots of critters. But where I live, we kind of just welcome the critters, too. So
critters.
It's a different take.
Critters and compost on today's Midday Matters. We do want to hear from you if you have a question or comment. 260-452-1185 or email middaymatters@nipr.fm. And, of course, if you check out our Facebook page, Laura sent some, I think we've got some crickets. Somebody just told a bad joke in the studio. Of course, if you check out our Facebook page, you can see some lovely photos that Laura Stein sent along. And, Laura, we were talking earlier about bulbs, and we only got about halfway through the photos here.
Yes, and so some of the other photos we have are daffodils, of course. You know, daffodils are great. And the you know, a beautiful thing that's happened in the industry is that daffodils are very popular, of course, and a good standby because when you plant daffodils, they multiply. You get more. Mm-hmm. They're unlike a tulip in that way. When you plant tulips, usually your best show is your first year, and then they tend to decline after that. Now, you know, there's some tulips that are just so gorgeous, big deal, you do it anyway, because, you know, they are amazingly pretty. But daffodils, if you're, you know, if you're gardening for the long haul, they're really a good economical way to go, because they multiply. So lots of different kinds of varieties of daffodils, and there's little tiny short ones and really big ones that, you know, 20 inches or more. So
wow, that's quite a daffodil.
It's a big daffodil, I know. So you put those in the back, of course. And then another photo I have that is just a really fun tropical bulb is called Fritillaria. And if you've, you know, talk about being brave. We were talking before with Anita about being brave. You got to be brave or hold your nose on these. The bulb has quite an odor to it. and I grew up on a farm, so for me to say that, it really is pretty strong.
And there's lovely orange and green colors on this plant.
Yeah,
perfect,
are
perfect for the season, even though I don't think of Fort Wayne necessarily as a tropical location.
Right. No. It looks very tropical. Yeah. I mean, it's just bizarre. It borders on bizarre. It's so fun, though.
People aren't familiar with some of these, but, you know, if you're going to a place that's selling a selection of bulbs, there's pictures on each box.
Sure.
You can see what it is you're buying. Then you have to read a little more to see when it blooms and how tall it gets. But be careful. They generally only sell tulips, hyacinths, daffodils, etc. in the fall, which is the time to plant them.
Right.
But they also sell other bulbs like amaryllis. So this is not an outdoor put in the ground bulb. So make sure you check which ones are outdoor and which ones are indoor, because like paper whites, you generally don't put those outside.
Correct.
And amaryllis. Those mm-hmm. are the two fall bulbs that you plant in pots and grow inside. So watch and see. I think you'll find that 98% of the bulbs that are available are for outdoor planting. And let's jump back to alliums real fast, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's a real favorite of mine, too. They are just so unusual. They're the ones that people ask about when they see them.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't bloom with the tulips, daffodils, and hyacinths. They bloom later.
A little later, right.
Yeah,
that's true.
And so they got to be annoying with me, because I put them out, and I want this early blooming. And then when it came time for to move the bulbs out of the way and plant spring flowers, the alliums hadn't bloomed yet. And it's like, now they're in my way for fast turnover, you know, with the soil and whatnot. So you might want to limit your alliums as to where you put them, where you're not going to disturb them after the other bulbs are finished.
And
so,
keep them in a, think
because,
about that when you plant them, sure.
Late spring, summer kind of bloom, early summer.
Kind of late spring. Well, and especially if you keep up the, if you keep the seed head up, then that gives you some extra, extra decorative feature too. Well, you know, into the early part of summer.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So they're not the earliest bloomer. That's true, but they are awfully fun.
260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest today. If you want to, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall where you can also see those photos, or send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Going to have some special guests joining us in the studio in just a few, not that you all aren't terribly special, in just a few moments. Do stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
It's already one of the most high-profile cases of drug contamination in memory. Nearly 24 dead from meningitis or strokes, and nobody knows how many more will get sick. What went wrong? Officials say a compounding pharmacy ignored the rules. I'm Neil Conan. Who makes our drugs, and how safe are they? Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
for keeping on top of the news.
You're listening to the BBC World Service.
I'm Robin Lustig.
I'm Julian Marshall.
This is Owen Bennett-Jones
with NewsHour.
For finding out what's happened.
They're out on the stage, the protest leaders, still trying to rally their supporters.
And for knowing why it's happened.
They've often then turned to the Taliban as another way of earning a living.
Stay in touch with the world with NewsHour from the BBC.
The BBC NewsHour, weekday mornings at 9 on WBOI.
Northeast Indiana Public Radio invites you to join us for a special afternoon of great classical music Saturday, November 10th. Pianist Wayne McEvely will perform the music of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, and Chopin in the Sweetwater Performance Theater. Admission is free, but donations are welcome, so join us for a delightful afternoon of wonderful piano performance Saturday, November 10th at 4 p.m. More information is available at nipr.fm.
It's just about 8 minutes before the top of the hour. You're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Laura Stein and Doug Hackbarth. We probably have time for one or two more questions during the last few minutes of the hour here. The number, 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at middaymatters. And Doug Hackbarth, we've got some special guests in the studio today.
Yes, we do. These folks are just in here for a couple of minutes or so. They wanted to talk about a program that's coming up this Saturday. So I'll let them introduce themselves, and they can tell you what their program is. Go for it.
Okay, I'm Mark Ringenberg. I'm a founding member of Hoosier Relief, and I'm here with Jackie. Say hello.
I'm Jackie Hopfer, also with Hoosier Relief and Cedars Retirement Community. And we're having a function this Saturday out at the Cedars and Leo, Indiana Cedars Retirement Community. And we're going to be having seminars in the morning. We're planting trees on campus, seminars, and a tree auction starting at noon.
And tell us a little bit about what Hoosier Relief does.
What we are is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that our main mission is planting trees and education as far as how do you properly plant a tree, how do you prune a tree, how do you compost properly. I noticed questions during this show that, you know, we could help with. We will be selling compost at the auction that day as well, Saturday as well. We've got beekeepers coming in to explain and try to persuade folks into becoming beekeepers. Mm-hmm. We've got Bill Dietrichs is going to be there Saturday morning. He's the retired city arborist from Fort Wayne. We'll be teaching pruning, proper pruning techniques for both large trees and individual flowering and shade trees and fruit trees. They all have different techniques. He'll be showing all of that. What else have we got going, Jackie?
We also have a master arborist, Tom Myers, coming to do air spading, which is a really neat way of transplanting new trees. It's not using a blades. It's actually using like an air gun with things.
Well, so you all have a whole lot going on here. Doug?
Yeah, let's get out where this address is, what the times are.
The auction's going to be going on at the Cedars Retirement Community, which is at 14409 Sunrise Court, and that's right in between Leo and Grable. It's in Leo. Starts at 8:30. We're doing tree planting. We have all kinds of volunteers looking for more volunteers to help us with trees. 10 o'clock starts seminars, and then at noon, like I said, is the auction. We'll have food on site. It's a whole day of education and
great family event.
Yeah,
another way to get folks out inside and learning about the outer spaces.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we'll get information about the event up on our Facebook page after the show here as well, so people can check it out if they like. Won't you all stick around? We've got another caller on the line. We can tag team a question here. Let's open the phones, and of course, about 4 minutes left in the program. If you want to get in under the wire, it's 260-452-1185. Let's go to Linda on the line. Good afternoon, Linda. You're on Midday Matters.
Yes, thank you very much. I hope you can hear me.
We've got you just fine.
Okay, great. My question is, I have a flowering pear in the front. It's not very large, and around it I have mulch. Then, luckily, I had wonderful hybrid bulbs and just daffodils, some tulips, everything around. Last spring was beautiful, planted around that, and they were great. This summer, I decided to do some perennials in that same bed, and I have different kinds of mums, the tall, lanky, the small, compact. They're beautiful all around there. What do I need to do before the spring bulbs can come up through all that? Do I chop it off? Do I let the winter take care of it? That's my concern.
Well, those bulbs will probably come up through anything. Laura, you had something?
There's
Go for it.
That's just what I was going to say. You're not going to have to really do much. The bulbs will come up right all around the bulb, the mums. Now, you might have some come up very close to the mums.
The mum stems will all be dead next spring anyway.
Yeah.
So
you may want to wait till December and then cut those back late. And then they should come right up through it.
Or next spring when you see the first signs of growth of the bulbs, you can just go out and simply snap those mum stems off.
Sure. Right. Until then, I can just let everything do its own thing.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You sure
can. That's right.
Okay. Well, I didn't ask for permission to put a couple different kinds of things in the same area, but I definitely love to see something blooming as long as I can. And it faces west and gets lots of great sun. So I'm glad to hear that I haven't done something that's absolutely wrong.
No.
Sounds like you're doing just fine.
Thanks a lot. And that's the beauty of growing bulbs. You know, you put these things in the ground. They don't have roots. You can hardly tell which way's up, which way's down. And yet, no matter what, these things will grow and they will not fail. These things, other than the fact that maybe a chipmunk will come in there and dig some out of the ground, they just don't fail. It's a great thing to do, bulbs.
Linda, we appreciate your call.
Thank you. You're my favorite day of the week when I can hear about all these wonderful outdoor things.
You're very kind. So thank you so very much. Have a good day. We have time for a very speedy final call. So let's open up the phone lines here. Once again, we're going to Eunice on line two. Eunice, just about 30 seconds here.
Yeah, I've got a very messy silver maple that's about 3 stories high. And now the next problem is that it's got black spots on the leaves, big black blobs on the leaves. What is that?
It sounds like a fungus or many trees get this time of the year. I was going to say a fungus or a mildew. Mark's on board. Go ahead, Mark.
Is it going to kill the tree?
It's not going to hurt the tree in the slightest. It's called tar spot. It's a disease that you don't really need to worry about much. If you clean up completely all the leaves this year, completely, you probably won't have it again next year. But if you don't, it is one of those diseases that passes on from when the rains come in the spring, it'll splash back up. So anyway, don't worry about it. It doesn't really hurt anything. It's just for looks.
Okay. Thank you.
Eunice, thank you so much for your call. And that brings us really to the top of the hour. So I just have time to say for all of our guests, thank you all so much for being here today. Thank you to our listeners for giving us a call and getting in touch. And I'm sorry to those who we couldn't quite get to this week. I'm Sean Beter. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOI Fort Wayne. Have a great day.